I'm Massimo Bottura.
This is Amanda Cohen.
This is David Kinch.
This is Mike Anthony.
This is Hoonie Kim.
This is Amanda Freitag.
This is Richard Blaze.
This is Paul Kahn.
This is Curtis Stein.
This is Stephen Harris.
This is Missy Robbins.
And you're listening to Andrew Talks to Chefs.
This is the thing that makes it challenging. Restaurants are escapism. To me, the best restaurants, it's about more than the food. It really is about the experience because for the most part, we can cook good food at home. You know, we can figure that out and you can get all sorts of good food delivered to your home. So what is the point of going to a restaurant? It's the experience.
The date is May 21st, 2020, and that is Rob Patron, our guest on this crossover special report of Andrew Talks to Chefs. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is a special report of Andrew Talks to Chefs. I am your host, Andrew Friedman. As always, our great thanks to Sam Pellegrino for covering the production costs of these special reports. We wouldn't have been able to deliver them to you without them. So my guest today is my friend Rob Patron. I imagine many of you out there may know Rob. He is a colleague. He is somebody I actually met through this show. Initially, he was someone who would comment on our posts and then, you know, would DM me, send me nice feedback. He, at the time, was the host and executive producer of the show Restaurant Hunter, for which he was a six-time Emmy Award winner. He's a total pro. I'm envious of his broadcasting abilities. He doesn't say things like a lot as I do from time to time. He doesn't move away from the microphone, case in point, the way I sometimes do. He's been doing this for a long time, and he's just terrific at it. We decided to do a crossover episode to help each other's listeners find each other's shows. Rob is currently doing a podcast called Hot Takes on a Plate. And on that show, he debates friends of his from the food world. Some of those people have been on this show. Many of them haven't. But if you're into the food scene, you'll probably be familiar with at least their names, if not their faces and voices. And they debate about their relative areas of expertise in the culinary realm. It's highly entertaining, and I wanted my listeners to be able to find his show if they haven't already. So what we did was this. We did what I'm referring to as a crossover episode. The notion, and to be honest, I watch almost no network television anymore, but when I was a kid, it was very typical for sitcoms on the same network to do a crossover episode to promote each other. So the characters from one show would appear on the other one, and then the narrative or the storyline would be continued over to the other show, right? What Rob and I did was we got together the other day virtually. We recorded two conversations back to back. We recorded 30 minutes for his show and then about 30 minutes for this show. We're launching them both at the same time on today, Thursday, May 21st, and you don't have to listen to them in any sequence since you're listening to me here. If you're not one of Rob's listeners who found their way over, you're done for the day after you listen to mine. If you're listening to my show first, then you have to go over to Rob's podcast, Hot Takes on a Plate, and listen to our conversation over there. They're both broadly about, you know, the pandemic and the lockdown, the two conversations, but the content of the conversations is completely different. They're two completely separate and freestanding dialogues. If you're just going to go search for it, you can search for it by name on your podcast platform. It is Hot Takes on a Plate. It will also be linked to from both the episode page for this conversation at AndrewTalksToChefs.com, as well as on the episode description at Apple Podcasts. And Rob's show, I should say, is on the Believe Network, but that is spelled B-L-E-A-V Network. That's something we do now. We don't spell things the way they're spelled in the dictionary, and that makes it cool. I do want to say I was very flattered. Rob, we did his show first when we recorded, and he said some very kind things about me, some very complimentary things about me. And all I can say is, Rob, the feeling is very mutual. I often say that my favorite thing about this show, other than the interviews themselves, is the number of friends I've made through it, both through the interviews and also from listeners who have reached out to me. Some of them have become pen pals. Some of them I've managed to meet. One of them was Jose Arroyo, our friend who's now been on the show twice. And Rob, you're part of that group. And, you know, all I can say is it's been one of my great points of pride throughout my life that I have really nice friends. I don't let people become my friends if they're not nice people. And I just think you're a good guy. And I'm really glad we were able to share this moment and do this crossover promotion in the midst of this misery that we are all living through. So I don't think I need to say anything else about it. I think if you haven't heard him before, if you're not living in the Northeast and you never saw the show Restaurant Hunter, which he did, which pointed people to all kinds of great restaurants, both well-known and kind of mom-and-pops and hole-in-the-walls and out-of-the-way places. He's a real enthusiast for the chef and restaurant world. He's very well-informed. He's not afraid to share his opinions. And with that, here you go. This is my conversation with my friend and colleague, Rob Petrone. So, Rob, first of all, can you tell me a little bit about where you are and how long you've been there?
I am in Northern Virginia, Loudoun County, at my in-laws' home, and I've been here for about a month. My family and I, we live in Brooklyn in a very modest apartment with no outdoor space, and I have two young children, and it was getting a little cramped, and we live near a park that is very crowded, and getting outside is hard, so my family and my in-laws, we had all been quarantining. We hadn't even been to any stores. We'd been getting groceries delivered, so it was safe. And it's been nice, but I think it's time to come home. You know, when you quarantine with other adults, there are challenges because adults kind of have it in their head how they like things. And so when you combine one couple with another couple and there's a parent dynamic, there are challenges, as I'm sure you could figure out.
The area where you are down there, what's it like? And I know you're basically quarantined, but have you gotten out of the house at all? And I'm just wondering what sort of differences you might have noticed between what this time looks like in a place like Brooklyn, New York, which is obviously, I mean, New York City is the worst hit city in America, and there in Virginia.
It's been weird. When I first got down here, it was a little bit of a shock because, look, their numbers are still, I guess, technically on the rise, but in a county of close to 500,000 people, I think at this point, they've got a grand total of 30 deaths. So that kind of paints a picture for you. You know, nobody's wearing a mask. You know, I've not been inside any supermarkets or anything like that, but like I walk around their neighborhood frequently and nobody's wearing a mask. But honestly, I don't know if they have to because you're not really closer than 30 feet from anyone. And it's not that crowded out. So most people, they have yards and they're in their yards. And so it's definitely a lot lower stress, lower anxiety. But I did go to a park the other day and I brought a mask and nobody else was wearing a mask. And it did wig me out a little bit. And I don't know if that's PTSD from being in New York and having that experience and coming here or just, you know, I don't know. There's a lot of sort of psychological things I think we're all grappling with right now. What's right, what's wrong, and you know, a little bit of policing other people, but not really knowing what's going through their head. And, it's a lot. But, you know, I was walking the dog with my oldest daughter the other day, and we walked by this house, and this woman's in the driveway, and she's nowhere near us. And she's like, you know, do you mind if I come over and say hi to your dog? And I'm like, from there you can, but no, like you cannot come up and pet my dog and be 2 feet from me. I don't know you and you're not wearing a mask.
At least she asked.
Right. But she looked at me kind of like, I can't. And I'm going, oh, geez.
Are you also, you've made a secret about it and please tell me if you don't want to talk about it, but you did have a cardiac event.
Yes.
Not that long ago. Do you know? I mean, are you someone for whom, you know, they say, you know, this, you have to be extra careful if you have sort of a certain pre-existing health conditions. Is this something that you're at higher risk for?
Honestly, I don't know if the doctors know, right? Like, I've asked my doctors and they think I'm intermediate risk because my age helps, but my heart condition doesn't. So, but, you know, we're seeing this thing affect all sorts of people differently. I think it's a guessing game, right? Like, nobody knows for certain. I do know I need to see my cardiologist in June. That's part of the reason I'm coming back to Brooklyn. It was an appointment I was supposed to have in person in March. And, you know, it didn't seem safe at the time. And now, you know, you got, at some point you got to roll the dice and say, all right, well, I can't put all my preventative care to the side. I mean, I'm doing the best I can on my own. When I checked into the hospital or checked out of the hospital, I was 211 pounds and now I'm 186. So I'm working hard at this thing as best I can. But, you know, I'd like to have some tests done just to make sure, you know, like, let's check some things out here, you know?
So, Rob, you know, I live for the last 5 years in the suburbs. I'm only about 18 miles from Midtown Manhattan. It is a different world, especially right now. I have not been in the city since the lockdown. I have not even driven through it. And this will sound very corny, maybe, but you know, I love New York City. I was born there. We left when I was 2 years old. I came back for college and never left. And I still love New York City the way people do. I don't want to see the city in its current state. You know, I'm not really. I don't need to.
It's depressing. I mean, look, when I was there, I tried to avoid going out in daytime hours because everybody was getting out to get their exercise. And as you know, you can't just walk in the middle of the street. So sidewalks were tight. Everything was tight. It was high stress. So I would do my daily walks, my exercise at night. And let me tell you, going out at 8 o'clock at night, Andrew, holy cow. I'd walk down, like, I know you know Brooklyn, Court Street, Smith Street, you know, those main, you know, roads in the Cobble Hill, Carroll Gardens part of Brooklyn. And at 8 o'clock at night, it looked like 4:30 in the morning. You know, like when you were young and you take the subway, you know, late night out and you knew you probably shouldn't be taking the subway at that hour, but you did anyway, because maybe you had a couple too many drinks and you get off the subway and it's 4:30 in the morning and there's nobody on the street and everything is closed. That's what it looks like, or at least it did. That's what it looked like at 8 o'clock at night on Court Street. No cars, nothing, weird, right? Like, just weird and depressing.
So when you have this viewpoint that you have now, this vantage point of being away for 4 weeks, I have a similar vantage point because although I'm geographically close, I am in a completely different environment. But I did live in New York City for about 30 years of my life, actually longer. You know, I'm watching, as they say, 48 states are going into various modes of reopening, quote unquote. I got to say, if I'm honest, and I would just love your unvarnished take on this, I'm so worried for my city. You know, I am so worried for New York City. I'm worried about a city that depends on a subway and bus system as much as New York does. I'm worried about restaurants that depend on cramming as many people as possible into mostly very tight spaces. I'm worried about the density within individual apartment buildings and what, you know, that means in terms of mailrooms and elevators. I just, as a New Yorker, I think about New York on this granular level, on this level that those of us who have lived there or do live there understand it. And I just wonder when we come out of this.
You know, I think one of the issues right now is that this whole pandemic, when it comes to open or not open, what's safe, what isn't, everything has been very binary. It's very, and it's become, quite frankly, politicized. And that's one of the things that I've really kind of struggled to wrap my head around, because I feel like people's feelings are getting in the way of facts. And I think there's nuance there that isn't being explored. I understand kind of both sides of it, but I don't think it's an all or nothing thing, right? Like, I don't think it's, okay, we're all open. Just open everything up. We're good. Just boom, open. Like, that doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't, because When this pandemic hit, everything was open and there were low numbers and it exploded. And if you think it's not going to explode again, you're not paying attention. You're just not. On the flip side, I understand the perspective of, well, I can't be locked up forever. I get it. And I also understand that there are a lot of people struggling right now who need to work and they need to make money and unemployment is going to run out soon or they can't. I get all of that. I think the issue is, I was saying this to my wife recently, she wanted to go strawberry picking this weekend here in Northern Virginia. And the place had all these regulations in place and they were open and they were only letting so many people into the field at a time and it's the fresh air and this and that. And I was like, I got no appetite for that. And the reason is not because of the business. I think the business probably was doing everything it could to be safe and smart. My issue is the people. I can't trust the other people who are going there, right? Because there are people like me who say, okay, well, I'm going to go to this field, but I'm going to bring a mask and I'm going to bring hand sanitizer and I'm going to keep at least 6 feet away from people. And then there's other people who are like, you know what? It's all a hoax and I'm not going to wear a mask and I'm just going to breathe down your face and force my values on you. And that's what worries me. That's what freaks me out. I'm sure you, since you follow the news, you probably saw that clip that was going around from Long Island that went viral of the protest on Long Island and the people screaming at the reporter. Did you see that?
100%.
That reporter, a little known fact, his name is Kevin Vesey. He is not only a personal friend of mine, but he was the original Restaurant Hunter videographer.
Oh my God.
Yes. And so I mean, I was laughing. I was like, I think that one video he did has been seen more times than the 600 episodes of Restaurant Hunter I did at this point. But it's you know, that's the kind of thing that worries me, is that there are people out there that don't care about everybody else. That worries me. You know, I think, and the fact that there isn't a playbook for all these, obviously we're going to talk about restaurants, but there isn't a playbook for everybody to get on, right? Like, we're all on the same page and this is how we're doing it. Everybody's left to their own devices to figure this out. That's scary.
Well, you know, I think there is an argument, and I've been saying this for weeks, and it is, I mean, for you and me both, I think it would be more complicated because we do have children who, you know, are still of an age where they live in our homes. So we can't be that cavalier with our own health and mortality, right? Because there's people who depend on us. But, you know, every time you leave your house, you're taking a chance. If we're just talking in abstract terms, you could get hit by a car. You could be the victim of a terrorist incident. There could be some freak accident. You know, all kinds of things could befall you. And I could see arriving at a place where we all have to say, well, maybe we just need to throw in, you know, coronavirus with these chances we take when we leave our house. But that would be, for me, contingent upon society, you know, the general public agreeing to and adhering to certain protocols, right? And that's what you're talking about. Like, it's hard to talk about any kind of fatalism when you feel like there are people out there who are actively decreasing your chance of not getting sick.
I mean, look, I don't like to get political publicly, but I just don't understand this one. Like, there are certain instances in our country where I feel like there should be no politics. It's just, hey, there's a health crisis. How do we prevent people from dying? How do we keep our country safe and secure and everything going? And I don't understand, like, there's just such an inconsistency in messaging going on right now all over the place that it's confusing for people. And I don't understand that. Like, I think back to, you know, not to compare the two because it's different, but like when Superstorm Sandy hit, you know, you remember the pictures of President Obama and Chris Christie. And, you know, those are two people that stand on completely opposite ends of the political spectrum. But all that didn't matter because New Jersey was devastated and Obama is the president of the whole country. And there was just an appreciation and an understanding of, we need to get something done. And that was it. End of story. And right now, I think there's just a lot of confusion because there's a lot of mixed messages out there. And, you know, it can be overwhelming for people. And, you know, it's one thing if you get to make your own decision of, you know, how you're going to act. But in this instance, your own decisions affect other people. And that's really the scary part.
Talk to me about the restaurant industry, Rob, as you, I mean, let me just put it out there generally. As you see it, just from your accumulated knowledge of having done all those episodes of Restaurant Hunter, of doing your current show, Hot Takes on a Plate, on having, you know, from having friends at this point who are scattered throughout the industry, what do you think, and if you're able to, let's speak, well, I was going to say nationally, but maybe regionally, all right? Let's talk regionally and not specific to New York City. What do you think is the biggest single challenge that restaurants are facing existentially right now? What do you think is the thing that's going to separate those who make it from those who don't?
Well, I think it's twofold. I think there's the economics of it, right? Like, how do you make money? Restaurant, you know, the term that we keep hearing to the point where it's like, if I had a dollar every time I heard it, is razor thin margins. But it's true. It's what it is. So if owning restaurants are hard to make a profit on to begin with, and now you're talking about your dining room might need to be at 50% capacity or 25% capacity at all times. Well, how do you make that work? And we're talking about, more increase in takeout and delivery. Well, delivery is a hard thing to make money on. It's hard, not just because there's these predatory third-party apps that are cutting into your profits a lot, but you know, if you want to do your own delivery, it takes a lot of work to set up that infrastructure. And quite frankly, one of the things that restaurants make a lot of money on is alcohol. You know, people purchasing a bottle of wine or a beer or whatever, a cocktail. And even if you're selling that to go, well, guess what? Why would I buy a bottle of wine from a restaurant that marks it up X amount when if I'm getting delivery, I can just order from my local wine shop and save some money? So the economics of it is just, it's hard to wrap your head around. But then on the flip side, the reason we go to restaurants physically is for the hospitality. And especially in a place like New York City, you go to restaurants because you don't want to spend all your time in a tiny apartment, right? Like, that's the whole point. Like, you live in the city to get out, and you go, and these are the restaurants are like your extended living room, if you will. How do you create hospitality when everybody's wearing a mask? Or I think I read that there was a restaurant in Ohio that was putting up shower curtains to separate tables. Or
yeah, I saw that.
Like, how do you create hospitality when everything feels like you're going to the dentist and there's gloves and surgery? And so you the combination of why do I go out and does it feel comfortable to go out, combined with the economics. And I'll throw one other thing in there is, to me, restaurants are a communal experience. And some of the most fun experiences I've had at restaurants were communal. I think about, on Hot Takes on a Plate, I did an episode with Adam Lathan, who owns the Gumbo Bros in Brooklyn. And we talked about, it wasn't really a hot take episode, if you will. It was more about him talking about the decision-making into whether to stay open or to close or how to function. And I talked to him about the fact that one of the best meals I had in 2019 was one of his crawfish boils that he does this time of year. And I went with my dad, and it was me and my dad eating crawfish and drinking beers for like an hour and a half, you know, on tall stools at a high top. And it was that communal feeling, and it was fun. And I'm saying, how many people now are going to want to get together with people and dig their hands into crawfish? Some will, I'm sure. The same people that don't think they need to wear a mask or worry about other people's health. But I don't know, like, you know, how many people are going to want to share barbecue or share tapas or share hot pot or share family style Italian and pass things around and put their hands, buffalo wings or whatever? I don't know. These are things that need to be answered.
I was going to save this because you do your show Hot Takes on a Plate. I have a hot take, and I want you to tell me whether or not you agree with it. And then I will invite you to build on it, because I have what I think might be a partial answer for some restaurants.
Okay, give it to me.
In the short term. Now, you mentioned the communal thing, and you mentioned takeout, right? And you mentioned alcohol. So here's my hot take. I think in the short term, when capacities are going to be restricted to, most people think in many places, 25 to 50% capacity, that restaurants should shift their model, or some restaurants for whom this would make sense, that they should offer a combination of 1 hour of time in the restaurant for the consumption of beverages, and I'm saying beverages because some people obviously may want to be there who don't drink alcohol, so I'm not specifying alcohol, and to put in a takeout order. So the idea is this. You have a restaurant in New York. Somebody reserves a 60-minute table, right, which is a luxury if you're just drinking. You come in. You have a drink or two. You place your to-go order. And at the end of your hour, you are delivered a to-go bag and your check for whatever you consumed and your food. So you get your social time in the restaurant. The restaurant gets the beverage sale. The restaurant turns tables at a rate much greater than they would if they were doing full service dinner. And they're selling the food to go.
I think if that's going to work, though, I think 60 minutes is too long. Because a lot of times if you go out to eat, it might be 60 minutes, it might be 90 minutes, whatever. But I think 60 minutes, I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference. I think you're onto something if it's like 15 to 30 minutes, you have your drink, you hang out, and then you take the food and, you know, and that system's in place. Because at that point, you're right, you can turn the table faster. But then again, if it's only 30 minutes, is it worth people's time to hang out for 30 minutes? I don't know. These are all the challenges. Like, this is like, maybe the solution is more private parties.
Yeah, but I think private parties are going to still be an issue if they're indoors.
But maybe it's divvying up. Maybe there's more walls in restaurants and it's you and your friends who you trust. It's your group come in and you have a room. I don't know. I mean, everything feels fraught with challenges, doesn't it? Like all of it, like really. Like it's get a vaccine. That's really the solution, I think.
Well, yes, that would be that's where the National Restaurant Association should be putting its money.
This is the thing that makes it challenging. Restaurants are escapism, you know? Like to me the best restaurants, it's about more than the food. It really is about the experience because at this point, especially now, we've all been cooking so much. We all know how to, not all of us, but for the most part, we can cook good food at home. You know, we can figure that out. And you can get all sorts of good food delivered to your home. So what is the point of going to a restaurant? It's the experience. But if the experience is going to be altered in a way where it's not fun anymore, I don't know. Like, this is why it is such an existential threat to the industry, because this is what we're talking about. We're altering the experience, and that's what people want to do. I mean, look, the whole thing, it's lose-lose. Like, I feel like every decision a restaurant makes at this point, there is a downside to it. It's just risk analysis. There's no silver bullet. It's, you know, even like the whole, at the height of this, staying open or doing takeout and delivery, it's like, okay, well, do I employ my staff and help them out and bring in some money for myself? Or do I focus on keeping people safe, but they don't have an income? Like, you know, this is really the hardest part about all of this is that nothing seems like a slam dunk.
No, I think for a long time, it is going to be triage. I think for a long time, there is going to be kind of this meeting in the middle between coming to have a true hospitality experience and just wanting to support restaurants that you want to see around when this is all over. And I do think restaurants, regardless of how they do it, whether or not my idea, and I do like your idea of shortening the window of how long people maybe would spend there. But, you know, the idea I threw out there was premised on what I think we've all learned about each other during this time, what we've learned about the human species, which is that I think more than most of us realized, we really are social animals. You know, I think the desire to be amongst other people, whether it's walking down the street, whether it's being in a restaurant or a bar, whether it's being at a movie theater or a sporting event or a concert, I think we're realizing that a lot of that stuff was as much about our own individual interior experience as it was about sharing that energy with the other people. Strangers who are in the same space. You know, I look at all of a sudden the way Zoom calls have taken off, you know, calls that would have been conference calls most of the time until a few weeks ago. And now everybody's doing Zoom calls because they just want to see other people. It's kind of an amazing thing we're all learning about how we work.
Absolutely. And think about why podcasts are popular, right? And the most popular format of podcast usually is what we're doing right now. It's a conversation. It's an interview. It's, you know, like I think back to what the time I listened to podcasts the most was when I was commuting the most, when I was in my car for an hour and a half going from Westchester to Brooklyn, and I'd put on a podcast like your podcast, and it was like listening to a couple of friends chat for an hour and a half, and you didn't feel alone in your car, right? I mean, that was kind of the reason why I wanted to do Hot Takes on a Plate, is because the idea was, yes, it's hot takes and it's debate and all of that, but it's the idea was I have great conversations with my culinary world friends, you know, off camera, off mic, and I wanted to recapture that, you know, where we all do this, right? Where we debate people about different things and whatever, and I wanted to capture that. I wanted to capture that sort of, you know, off the cuff, fun conversations. Cause I think people like that. They like that. They feel like they're part of that, even though they're not. And so, yeah, I think in general, like whether it's podcasts or restaurants or whatever, even when we're not with somebody, we want some kind of form of entertainment that makes us feel like we're included and we're part of something.
You know, the one other thing is, I don't know if you're experiencing it the same way, but things are changing so fast. You know, it wasn't that long ago that everything was shut down. And now, as I mentioned earlier, places are starting to reopen a little bit.
It's whiplash.
Is there any part of you that's dreading returning to New York?
I mean, I at the beginning of this, I said, one of my fears, and this kind of goes counter to what you were saying about being social creatures, is that I was a little worried we were reprogramming our brains to not be social creatures, to be afraid of people walking up to us. And I don't know. I mean, I feel like I can't project how I feel onto other people, because I feel like I'm in a little bit of a unique situation as somebody who, you know, survived a heart attack not that many months ago. I know what it feels like at a very literal level to be in a hospital bed attached to a bunch of cords, and it's not a pleasant thing. So I think for me, I'm a lot more cautious than most people because of that, because that is still in my head.
When the day comes, when the clouds part, when we're able to, with some confidence, go back to the restaurants we want to go back to, is there one? Do you have one? Have you dreamt of one yet? Have you selected one yet? What's your, you know, people talk about the Last Supper, you know, or your last meal. What's your first meal?
Well, I think the next step for me, before I go into actually physically dining in a restaurant, I've been thinking about this a lot when I return to New York, is doing some field trips for food. So instead of ordering delivery or takeout, maybe taking the car and driving 45 minutes or an hour to a restaurant. You know, I still want to do the Blue Hill at Stone Barns box. I'm sure you've read about this, what Dan Barber is doing. I mean, I am just blown away by that. I want to go and pick up one of those boxes and cook with those ingredients. So that is something that I want to do. I want to go and visit. Look, anyone who knows me, who's watched the show on Long Island or listened to the podcast, knows I'm such a fan of King Umberto on Long Island in Elmont. It is this old school, dates back to the 1970s, Italian-American restaurant on one side, pizza counter on the other. And the younger generation is now involved in the game. They have been for a while. And my boy, John Cesarano, who makes the pizzas there, you know, he learned from his father, Ciro, who is one of the forefathers of the grandma pizza. And you know, John is like, he's a young guy who's taking, you know, those things that you see in the city, the modern slice joints, that's what he's doing there. So you have the old school element, but he does this one pizza. He calls it the Metro. It's this elongated, like kind of Roman style, but it's not a traditional sort of Metro pizza. It's got this crust where on the outside, it's just so airy on the inside, but it's crunchy on the outside, and it's like this perfectly fermented dough, and it's got like a little bit of tang. It's like eating the best rustic bread you've ever had, but with, you know, fresh mozzarella, homemade in-house, and great sauce on top. And it's just like I'm getting close to ready to make a field trip there and have them drop a pizza in my trunk. Like these are the things I think about. Near you, Mariachi Mexico in Armonk is a fantastic Mexican restaurant, and they're doing what a lot of people are doing now that's smart. They're doing the family style dining where they've got, you know, for one price, you get a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a pitcher of margarita. I'm ready to go to Mariachi Mexico, get a family style meal, and bring it somewhere and have a picnic. I think that's the first step for me, is to do that and then ease my way into the sit-down dining once we figure out how to do that safely.
Well, on that note, Rob, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm glad we did our crossover. It takes me back to the sitcoms of my youth.
No, I love it. I love it.
Maybe when they're doing sit-down service again, you and I will go get one of those pizzas together. I've never been there.
Absolutely, Andrew. Anytime.
And that's our show for today. Again, my huge thanks to Rob Patron for engaging in this crossover episode with me. I'm so glad we got this in before these special reports were over, Rob. Again, if you are my listener initially, please do find your way over either by linking from the episode page for this show at andrewtalkstochefs.com or from the Apple podcast details for this episode, or simply by searching out Rob's show online. Hot Takes on a Plate, again, is the name of his show. It is on the Believe Network, B-L-E-A-V. You can find it quite easily, and if you're looking at it within a day or the 6 days of when this episode drops, the interview with me at Rob's show should be at the top of the roster. Before wrapping things up, I do also want to let you know that tomorrow, Friday, May 22nd, it is our weekly Shelter on Plus review, featuring guest critics Allison and Matt Robicelli. This week, we'll be discussing a movie I have never seen. It is Allison's pick. I am told it is spectacularly, entertainingly horrible. It is called Little Italy. I'll be watching that before Friday, obviously. We'll be recording Thursday night and dropping that show on Friday. So if you want to be ready for that show and prevent yourself from having anything spoiled in our discussion, please watch it and then give a listen to our conversation. Again, we'd love it if you please checked out our Patreon page at patreon.com. That is patreon.com/AndrewTalksToChefs. If you enjoyed this show, please do explore our archives at AndrewTalksToChefs.com or on your favorite podcast platform. Please subscribe on those platforms. It is free and new shows will drop into your podcast queue as they are launched. And we would love it if you would please rate or review the show, especially on Apple Podcasts. And if you would tell your friends via social media posts, text, emails, word of mouth, however you like to share things with people, we are trying to grow the show and we would appreciate your support in that way as well. Thank you to Wild Turkey Surprise for today's opening music and to After School Special for the music you are listening to right now. Please seek them out online and enjoy more of their music. Thanks to our engineer, Margaret Kelly, for mixing these special reports. Thanks to Sam Pellegrino for making these special reports possible. And thank you to all of you for listening. Please take care of yourselves. Take a breath, and we will all get through this together. See you tomorrow.